Good evening. If you open your Bibles to John chapter 2, we're going to begin our study there. As we make progress in studying the life of Christ, in this fourth lesson, we've taken a look at, again, Jesus' first disciples. And we've taken a look at who do we know of by name, anyway, that has become a disciple of Jesus? Jared?
Who went and found his brother? Starts with an A. Andrew, there we go. And his brother is? Trust me, I understand. Lindsay and I sometimes are...
Peter.
Peter, yes, it was Peter. But again, what was his name when he met Jesus?
Simon.
Simon, and Simon was renamed Cephas or Peter. And then
who else have we discussed in John chapter 1 that we became disciples of Jesus besides Andrew? And likely there was somebody else with Andrew, and likely it was John. And then we also studied about last week who else then followed John and then went and got somebody else.
Philip.
And Philip then went and found Nathanael. And what was it that Jesus then did to impress Nathanael in terms of who he was? Yeah, he did. He told him that was the second thing. What was the first thing that he?
Oh, you are a Jew.
An Israelite.
Indeed,
in whom is no guile. And again, Nathanael's question was,
How do you know me?
And then Jesus, that's when Jesus then says, I saw you when you were sitting under the fig tree. And Nathanael's response to that was, having just those two aspects revealed to him by Jesus, Nathanael responded with, Rabbi, and
you are the Son of God.
And
you are the King of Israel.
And Jesus then responded by saying, Jesus said,
you didn't
see nothing yet. Again, you're going to see far greater things than these. And so
that's our study this evening.
Alright, so having discussed the first disciples of Jesus, we're now going to take a look at the first miracle, although we kind of talked about how that Jesus began to kind of show, again, his divine side in revealing those things to Nathanael. But again, the first recorded miracle in John chapter 2. So let's go ahead and read, if I can get someone, a volunteer this evening, read John chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. John chapter 2, 1 through 12. Thank you, Randy.
John 2, 1 through 12. On the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water. So they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, draw some out now and take it to the head waiter. So they took it to him. When the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know where it came from, the servants who had drawn the water knew. The head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, every man serves the good wine first, when the people have drunk freely, and then he serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now. This beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum, he and his mother, and his brothers, and his disciples, and they stayed there a few days.
So, John chapter 2, verse 1, begins with the phrase, on the third day. And we noted how that, again, the author, John, the Apostle John, has now been kind of counting days, as it were. If you go back to verse 29, We see here that it says the next day he saw Jesus coming to him and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." Verse 35, when he began to call his disciples, it says again, the next day John was standing with two of his disciples. And in verse 43, we see in the next day he purposed to go forth into Galilee and he found Philip. And now we come to chapter 2, verse 1, and it says, "Now on the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee." So we see a succession of days going on here, as recorded by John. And he says then in verse 2, "And on the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there." So we see again that Jesus, and in verse 2, "And Jesus also was invited, and his disciples, to the wedding." So again, his mother was there, and we read that Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding as well. Now, all of us have been to a wedding in our lifetimes. I think it's just interesting to note, and I think it helped, and as we study this context, what were weddings like during the time of Christ, a Jewish wedding? Anybody have any, ever do any study on that?
It seems like I've read that they were long affairs, big, huge feasts, maybe more than, like, over multiple days sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're on the right track here. Yes, it was a big deal. We're used to a wedding today might involve again a 30-45 minute hour long ceremony, and then there's a reception that, depending on, it might be a couple hours, might be 3 or 4 hours, and then everything's done. But as Carolyn noted, that's not weddings during the time of Christ. That was not a Jewish wedding. And again, you can do some, study on this, but this is from Nelson's Bible Dictionary. And the pertinent parts I wanted to point out was that he says the marriage ceremony with its accompanying festivities. Among the Jewish people, a wedding was a festive occasion in which the whole community participated. Now, oftentimes we might have a wedding where there's just, 50, 100 people, it might be a small gathering. This was a community affair amongst the Jews. And then he went on to say the bridegroom would set out for the house of the parents' brides and the parents' bride. The bride's parents, excuse me. So the groom would go to the bride's parents' house. And the groom received his bride from her parents with her blessings and wishes of the friends. And then he conducted the whole party back to his house or his father's house with song, music, and dancing. In the event, in the evening, the bride was escorted to the nuptial chamber by the parents and the groom by his companions or the bride's parents. And then on the next day, here's Karen, your point, the festivities resumed, continuing for 7 days. And again, in everything I read of a Jewish wedding, you have the ceremony in which, again, the groom would go to the house of the bride, would then proceed back to the bride's house. You would have the ceremony, as it were, and then there would be a 7-day, as it were, festivity. So, again, keep that into context in terms of what we give. Sometimes we take our concept of how a wedding is. Sometimes perhaps doesn't make sense. But this is what took place then in Jewish society in regards to a wedding. And so this is what we read, that the mother of Jesus was there, and Jesus was invited. His disciples were also invited to the wedding. So when these events take place, again, we don't know exactly when during this normal wedding, can I use the word process? Where these events take place. But what we do know from the scriptures then is that, again, on the third day, while at the wedding, what do we read happened in verse 3? The wine gave out, ran out. They didn't have enough wine. And again, how long did, in terms of the preparations for this wedding, how much preparation did you need to make? You need to make preparations for 7 days worth. And was it just for a handful of people, generally? No, again, it was generally a community affair. But But it says that somewhere during this process, during this wedding that took place, it says that the wine ran out. The wine gave out, as it were. When exactly did that happen? We're not told. Okay, we're not told if it was the first day of the festivities, the fourth day, the seventh day. We're just told that the wine ran out. We're going to talk more about this later, but the word wine, I'm missing a quotation mark there, is from the Greek word oinos, and Zaniyat simply says it's wine derived from grapes. It's what comes from the grape. And we'll talk more about the definition of that word yet to come. So again, the wine has ran out. What then, when... Who is it that informs Jesus that the wine has ran out? His mother. And verse 4, Jesus said to her, "Woman, what do I have to do with you? My hour has not yet come." That phrase, what as we read in verse 4, "Woman, what do I have to do with you?" In essence, it's saying, what does that have to do with you and me? How does this event relate? How is it tied together, you and me? What is the connection here between you and me and the fact that the wine ran out? And then Jesus says what? "My hour has not yet come." Is that a phrase unfamiliar with the life of Christ in terms of referring to his hour? And let's go ahead and take a look at some of these passages again. It's interesting, in the book of John, in terms of his hour, John chapter 7, verse 30. Juan, could you read that for us? John 7, verse 30.
John 7, verse 30. "So they were seeking to seize him, and no man laid his hand on him, because his hour had not yet come."
In that context, what hour is John referring to? Yeah, his time to complete what God had sent him to do. And so no man was laid hands on him, it wasn't the right time for him then to again lay down his life. Chapter 8 and verse 20. Chapter 8 and verse 20. Bruce, could you read that for us?
"These words he spoke, he betrayed me as he taught and told me, and no one sees me, because his hour had not yet come."
Again, who decided when his hour was? His father did. And was anything going to get in the way of when that hour would come? No one was going to lay hands on him. No one was going to... And were there efforts during the ministry of Christ to bring about that hour sooner? Who prevented it from happening? The Father did. His hour had not yet come. Chapter 8, verse 20. As we read, let's go to chapter 12, verse 23. Again, just trying to put a little chronology here to the use of the phrase "the hour." Sarah, could you read that for us?
12:23.
Okay, so Jesus understood again there in 12:23, his hour had not yet come. And then, Sarah, also verse 27.
"Now my soul has become troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, for this purpose I came to this hour."
And interesting, from chapter 12 onward, how much time during the life of Christ actually takes place from chapter 12 onward? Yeah, it's just about a week. So again, we see in chapter 12, again, the aspect of Jesus saying there that he understands that there is an hour to come. And Jesus said, "I'm not going to try and, it's not my job to prevent that hour from coming." And then we go down to chapter 13, verse 1. And Jared, can you read that for us? Okay, so again, Jesus knew about this hour. It was coming, knowing it had come. Again, it's now time. He knows, and we're going to, as we said, the life of Christ, there's, and I don't remember which gospel it says this in, I'll try and learn that, but it says, before he went back to Jerusalem for the final time, it says he set his face towards Jerusalem. That he went and he understood, this is my last time, you know, going to the city of Jerusalem. And he knew that when he went to Jerusalem that time, that again, it was the hour. And then finally, chapter 17 and verse 1. Chapter 17, verse 1. Rick, could you read that for us?
Jesus spoke these words, lifted up his eyes to heaven, and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son also may glorify you.
All right, so again, now you see in chapter 17, really, it's Jesus' prayer unto his Father, realizing it's time. It's time for me to lay down my life, and once I do, praying that his Father would once again glorify him. So again, a little bit of a chronological history of Jesus and others talking about his hour coming. But let's go back to John chapter 2. This is, go ahead.
Luke 9:51.
Thank you. He said his face towards Jerusalem. And so, let's see if I can remember that next week. Quiz me on that, okay? Luke 9:51. John chapter 2, but we're just at the beginning, right? I mean, Jesus is just starting. He's just called some disciples to follow after him. And already he's telling his mother, my hour has not yet come. In what respect would he be talking about? How does that fit in this context? I guess this is my question. That just at the very beginning, he's saying, my hour has not yet come.
He knows the time frame. All of this is to take place. He declares himself now that's going to start things. I think that's...
Absolutely. And again, what... Does Jesus know what he's going to do here?
Yes.
What happens when Jesus begins performing miracles?
People notice.
People notice. People begin to follow. In fact, multitudes began to follow Jesus because of his miracles. In fact, some of the people that, and this is a fascinating thing, when we study the life of Christ and the miracles he does several times, he will perform a miracle on somebody and then tell them to tell no one about it. Because what was happening in terms of Jesus and his ministry and the miracles and the effect of all the people? Again, I mean, people were throwing upon him to such an extent that he wasn't able to do the ministry, do the work, to do the teaching that he came to do. We see here again very early on him thinking about, again, that my hour has not yet come. Knowing that, again, once I begin performing miracles, again, it will start the ball in motion. So many people follow, but... Again, the effect of his miracles and many people following after him and crowding around him and thronging around him, what was the effect on the Jewish leadership? They're beginning to get angry. And again, you see, as we read about the chronology of my hour has not yet come, there were attempts early on to put him to death. And the effect of his miracles upon those who had hard hearts, whose hearts couldn't be pricked by the truth of what he was doing, the more miracles he did, it just further what? Angered them. The more people that followed Jesus, it just made them more jealous. And we see here early on Jesus, in terms of his miracles, talking about the fact that he knows, in essence, the effect of the miracles upon what he came to do. To teach, and then ultimately to lay down his life. And I think when he says that my hour has not yet come, and it's interesting to note, well, we'll make this point in just a moment, but I need to make it now. Who, in John chapter 2, who knew about this miracle? Drop down to verse John chapter 2, in verse 11. Who knew about this? And who recognized the sign of what he did? his disciples. There's one other person in this story we know that knew what happened. His mother. Okay, there's one other. The head waiter, as it were. The one who actually, that is in verse 9. You know, but the servants who had drawn the water knew. So there were just a handful of people who knew. Did everybody at the wedding feast know? No. There's not evidence. The disciples knew. Those who drew the water knew. Mary knew. But we see again, was this a miracle that necessarily impressed the whole multitude, everybody at the wedding feast? We're not told that, no. Somebody have their hand up?
I thought it implied that the head waiter didn't know, but the servants knew.
That's true. Again, the servants who drew the water, again, verse 9, but the servants who had drawn the water knew. Again, they knew we put water into these water butts. So they knew we put water in there, and now they're drawing out wine. Randy?
It seems upon first reading that he's reluctant to do it. When he says in verse 4, what does that have to do with us? Is what the New American Standard says. There's a reference in the margin that says literally, what to me and to you, a Hebrew giving.
Right, yeah, it is. It's almost a Hebrew. What, me and you, what does this have to do with us here together?
Right, it's not their place. I mean, they're not rulers of the feast. They're just invitees. They don't have anything to do with setting on stuff before the guests.
Right. Why you and why me, you know, dealing with this?
Well, when he says, my hour has not yet come, it sounds like he's saying, why do you want me to do that? Because I'm not ready to do that yet. But that can't be what he means. Because miracles are performed to confirm the word. That's a fact. We know that from Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1 and 4. Miracles are not done to do favors to people. Nobody, Paul didn't heal his sick friends because he could. He had sick friends and he didn't heal because the word had already been confirmed about. So in this case, we see down in verse 11 that he manifested his glory and his disciples believed in it. That had to be the purpose of this miracle.
Oh, yes. But I believe the aspect of tying that into my hour has not yet come was the fact that he was not ready to manifest his power, his divine power, to everybody. That it was a limited revelation of his power to his disciples, which is those few people who knew. My hour hasn't come to display my miraculous power to everyone. And he wanted to display it only to a limited few. And that's my Mickey and then Carolyn.
One, you said was based in my comment from verse 11. Later on, of course, we see that Nicodemus, in the third chapter, recognizes some of the things that Jesus has been doing and identifies him as a teacher comes from God. No man can do the things that God does except God be with him. Evidently, Nicodemus, a ruler among the Jews, had observed something. He might very well have learned about this.
Yeah. Carolyn?
I wonder, too, if it's significant that it's the servants who are in on it and the head waiter, who is probably of a little bit more importance, doesn't know about it. Otherwise, word might have spread more. But here was somebody who was probably considered not that important, and yet they were privy to this information. They saw what happened rather than somebody in.
Okay. All right.
An interesting thing you probably plan to talk about who this man is, the head waiter or the fellow in charge. He's an interesting fellow in relation to the customs.
There was someone who was kind of put in charge over
the wedding
planner, as it were, yeah. And that would make sense. If you have a whole week's festivities, you have a lot of different aspects to, both the drink and the food and everything to go on. You need somebody to coordinate it. I mean, yeah, he was the head man.
That was the function, and certainly as you read about Jewish weddings, it talked about, you know, the person who, again, put everything together. Noah, and then Juan?
Well, it would have been later, he had to deliver out of wine. And then when he tasted the wine, he was like, probably, well, where did this come from?
Yeah.
So he had to.
But he didn't know what was put into the water pots to begin with. All he knew is that when he tasted it, he said, this is the good.
He didn't have wine, but then when he tasted it, he knew there was wine, so.
Yeah, he didn't know anything about how it came about.
Yeah.
That's
curious, but he probably think that he brought this.
Yeah, I mean, he was also went to another town with somebody else's house to get it. I mean, he didn't know. Certainly they don't have grocery stores back then to go buy.
In this particular setup, he does say, I think she answered that his mother answers him because he's sitting there going, it's not my hour, it's not something that I need to be doing. Because she didn't really give him a choice. She sat there and was like, told the servants.
What's the next thing? You.
Right.
Yeah.
And so on that flip side, everybody would sit there and say, why did he do it? Things like that. But he was honoring his mother especially if he's going to go through all this sinless. That's one of the things, especially the Ten Commandments. You go there and honor thy mother and thy father. So she sat there pretty much and did not give him a choice.
Well, see some faith on her part. I think he brings up again. I know that my son, and she knows who he is. I know my son. Whatever he says, do it. And again, there's a sermon there, isn't there? Whatever Jesus says, do it. And then, the fascinating account when we get to, again, actually calling his 12, when he forms his 12 apostles, when he came to Peter, remember when he had fished all night? And he didn't catch anything, and what did Jesus tell him? Cast your nets on the other side. You remember what Peter said to Jesus?
We've been fishing all night.
And then he said,
but if you say so, we'll do it.
Again, the old New American Standard said, but at thy bidding, because you said so, because he said do it. Peter says, I'll do it, because you said so. Again, we see the faith of Jesus' mother saying, all you have to do is do what he says. I have that faith in my son, that I know who he is. Whatever he says, do it. And again, there's a lesson for all of us there in terms of our life and what we do, our response to Jesus also. Whatever he says, do it. Anything else in so far? So again, we see here that... Bruce, thank you.
But what about the timing of the serving of the
wine? The timing of what?
The timing of the serving of the wine.
The serving?
Yeah. Is that really important as far as the Jewish divisions?
No, I mean, as far as what day within the 7 day?
Yeah. How they serve the wine.
No, if again, then I'll file that under the category of God meant for us to know that He would have told us.
You're serving the good wine now.
It's not at the beginning. It's somewhere along the line. We're not told. We're not told when. And to that extent, I would answer, it doesn't matter, does it?
It seems like it's important, because I guess you could talk about the
wine. Yeah, we will. But again, the point is, it happens somewhere during the week-long celebration. We don't know if it's day 3, day 5, whatever like that. Again, we know that it wasn't at the beginning, that they had wine to drink, and at some point in time it ran out. At some point in time it ran out. Jonathan?
Kind of on the same track, but from the temptations that we just studied, we made a big point about how Satan was tempting Jesus. If you are the Son of God, do this. And if you really are, and the angels will come and do this, how he tempted him by saying, can you really perform these things here? It's almost a pride thing that we're getting at. And how this instance is different with it. Satan was tempting, saying, if you are, then you are
be of faith, isn't it?
Big distinction between the two, her extreme confidence and Jesus not taking that as a temptation from his mother, saying, can you do
right
thing? She says, I know.
I know
he's capable of it.
Right, it's not about proving to his mom. Again, that's why we keep going to verse 11. The whole point, why did Jesus do this? Because he says, I'm going to prove myself. I'm going to display a sign to my disciples, and to a few people who know what went into those pots. And I'm going to display a sign as to who I am. And you're right, I think it's an interesting point that his mother was not challenging him, but simply again expressing confidence in him that again he will take care of it. So again, whatever he says to you, do it. What is it that Jesus then says regarding what needs to be done? And we've kind of made this point already. Fill the water pots with water. Fill them up. Verse 7, they filled them up to the brim. And then he said to them, verse 8, draw some out now. And so they, the same people who put the water into the water pots, they filled it to the brim, brought it to Jesus. Jesus says, take some out now. It wasn't a few days later. Again, we talk about miracles and signs that it's immediate. And immediately some is drawn out. And it is taken then to the head waiter, again, or to the person in charge. Draws him out and take it to the head waiter. And simply put, the water that had been put into the water pots had immediately become wine. It wasn't in the stage, it wasn't a version, it was wine, it was oinos. Jesus had made that water become wine. And again, when we say this context, again, this beginning of his signs, Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and manifested, again, manifested means
made obvious.
Made obvious, to reveal, make known, to show to others, manifested his glory. And the result of the sign that Jesus did and the manifestation of his glory, that his disciples believed in him. There's the point. His disciples believed in him. They knew water had been put into those pots. They knew immediately some had been drawn out of those pots and taken to the head waiter. And they knew that that water became instantly wine, oinos. And when they saw that, they believed. They believed in Jesus. And again, he did this so that his glory might be made known again to his disciples and to those few people who knew what Jesus had done, who knew what he had accomplished. Now, it's interesting to me to note, and at least in the New American Standard, John does not, in the Gospel of John, use the word miracle, which is from the Greek word dunamis. Dunamis means, because yeah, that's where we get our word dynamite. It means inherent power. And again, when you read the word miracle in most of the other New Testament scriptures, when it's miracle, it's from the Greek word dunamis. It's power. It's divine power. But that's not the word John uses. John uses 19 times in his translated numeric standard word sign, the Greek word simeon. Is it? And what this word means is that by which a person or a thing is distinguished from others. It's a distinguishing mark. So it's what separates one person from another. And when Jesus performed a sign, it distinguished him from anybody else. Of miracles and wonders which God, again, authenticates the men sent by him. It was a mark of authentication that distinguished somebody sent by God. Again, Hebrews chapter 2. A mark of authentication. A distinguishing mark. Does it show his dunamis power? Yes. But it's interesting, John constantly uses this word, Simeon, sign, distinguishing mark. That which sets him apart, that which authenticates him being sent by God, or by which men prove that the cause they are pleading is God's cause, God's will. And so I think that it's important to note that in terms of this word that is used there in verse 11, the beginning of his signs which he did. And again, when we talk about the Gospel of John as we began this study, why did John record this? Why did John write the Gospel of John? That you may believe by presenting authentication marks, by presenting distinguishing marks that prove that, again, this is the one sent by God, that you might believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God and believing. Okay. So, why did, and again, who else, who of the four Gospels recorded this miracle? Anybody else? This is just John. So why would John record this moment in the life of Christ? What was his purpose in recording John 2, verses 1 through 11?
To prove that this is Jesus the Christ, the Son of God.
To begin to make the case, to provide the authentication, the distinguishing marks that this is the Son of God, that he is sent by God as his Son, and that again, believing, we might have life in his name. So, when we study this context, and we're going to get to, as I've heard the expression, if there's an elephant in the room, introduce him. We're going to get to the elephant in the room. But, why did John record John 2, 1 through 11? John recorded this so that we could believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. So that we could begin to get these marks of authentication, proving who he was, that authenticate him, that distinguish him from anybody else. So we need to keep that in mind, why he wrote this down, and to remember these points about this context. Again, okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw in Acts 2:22.
Okay.
When Peter's, you know, the first gospel sermon says, "Men of Israel, listen to these words, Jesus the Nazarene, the man attested to you by God with miracles and wonders and signs, God performed through him in your midst, just as you yourself know."
Right.
Whatever it was he was doing, whether it's, you know, the word of sign or miracle or wonders or whatever it was obviously from God.
Absolutely. And again, I think we need to appreciate the differences in the words between miracles, showing his power, divine power. And again, signs, talking about authentication, distinguishment of who he is, distinguishment by the power. By his power over to change, you know, water into oinos and into that which comes from the grave, and again, that's, it's powerful, yes, but it's distinguishing, it's authenticating.
And then the word wonder, passage you read, indicates the result that
Yeah.
We can't explain this.
Right. Wonder, and then the ultimate result is what? Verse 11. Belief, faith. This is not explainable in human terms. And again, going back to Nathaniel, you know, who again believed because of what Jesus told him that he shouldn't have known. And again, here we see others who saw Jesus do what he shouldn't have been able to do. And it authenticated him in their eyes. It says, we believe. We believe, Bruce.
I think in John chapter
important. We need to, again, the original audience for this sign was rather limited. The audience for this sign now and forevermore
is meant for all of us. It's meant for all of us to again, see the distinguishing marks of Jesus that authenticate him. We are now the audience of this sign. And so again, the 3 points about this context. This is the first sign that he did. The sign, again, revealed Jesus' glory. It revealed his divinity, that he is from God. And the sign had what effect? Had the effect, the intended effect. It was intended to produce faith. And that day when he did it, it produced faith. It caused men to believe.
I'm struggling with that last one. I don't necessarily say it was intended for that, but its effect could be that. But honestly, just the way that it was written, you honestly see that he was doing it for his mother. That was the only reason. I mean, he argued, well, you know, but he made the point, this isn't even my time yet, but he did what she asked because she asked it of him. Now, the effect is that they believe because they just witnessed the miracle, but it wasn't. I don't think it was that intention. I don't see it worded that way, at least that it was his intention to make others believe. He did what his mother asked, but because of that, people believe because they just saw what happened.
Well, I think the relationship to my hour has not yet come has to do with the limitation of the audience here. That again, that it was his purpose not to reveal his power, his divinity, to show this sign to everybody, but to show it to his disciples, to those who would know what would happen. He wasn't ready to show his miraculous power to everybody, but again, he chose this opportunity to reveal himself to a small audience and to begin, again, authenticating himself. Maybe.
John, in the text you have there, John 20, sums all of the miracles, or the signs, as he calls them throughout this book, up as far as purpose. Many signs did Jesus that are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you might believe. So, John records it to that end. That's all he did.
Yeah.
I was going to say, relationship to your discussion about the word being used here is that this word for signs is used 76 times in the New Testament, and dunamis is used 119 times, but John never uses it.
I found that interesting that John chose this word in his gospel to talk about the miraculous powers. And he chose to use it in terms of, again, this aspect of authentication and distinguishment. And no doubt you see the dunamis power, but again, it's about, again, creating belief, creating that which we can trust him. And again, we see, again, I keep using that word because it just resonated with me when I read that definition in Thayer, authentication. It authenticated him. And again, just like in the art world, you know, and I don't know anything about this, but I know that in terms of a genuine Picasso, there's some authentication somewhere in the painting that says, yes, this is him. This is truly a Picasso or Rembrandt. You know, there's a distinguishing mark, a distinguishing aspect to them. And this is, again, Jesus providing those distinguishing marks to show who he is. And again, that again, he is to be followed. He was the one sent by God. And so we've talked about these points about his hour not yet come and who saw the sign. I think we've just got about a minute, right? So just in terms of where we're going to go, okay, so we've talked about what happened, okay? When I made the point of why did John record this, it's to the point of, again, where we're going to go next week. What do people want to go to John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11 to prove or to show?
It's okay to drink wine.
It's okay to drink alcoholic, well, let's clarify that. It's okay to drink alcoholic wine. It's okay to drink and so forth. And this is a proof context that people will go to who want to establish that point. That's not why John wrote this. Again, number one, we got to get that point across. But number two, we need to then be able to, you know, if somebody's going to use this as a proof text for why I can go down and get me a few bottles of wine today and begin to drink until I get a little tipsy here, why not then? And so we need to talk about that. And then we're going to begin and simply put this up. What does the word oinos mean? And I gave you the one definition from Zadiates that, again, it simply means from the grape. But the word oinos is a general word for wine. And the bottom line is when you read the scholars, it does not necessitate either intoxicating or non-intoxicating. The word is used for both. And the fact is that there was one word in the Greek language for wine. And in the Hebrew language, there were four words that distinguished. But in the Greek language, they had but one. It was used for both wine that was alcoholic and wine that had just been squeezed from the grape. And so we'll begin with our understanding of again, dealing with that question of when somebody comes and says, well, this is my reasoning for going and having a few beers because Jesus, again, turned water into wine. We need to be able to answer that question. And what I would suggest doing is, and we're going to do this next week, is that we need to go to what God's Word says in general about intoxicating beverages. We need to take a look at everything. And we then need to ask ourselves, is that what Jesus was talking about? So we'll do that, Lord willing, next week. Thank you.